of connection. 7 relationship building skills every leader needs now. And he has pioneered the fields of creative thinking, accelerated learning, and innovative leadership. He leads seminars for organizations like DuPont, Merck, Microsoft, Nike, Raytheon, and the University of Virginia's Darden School of Business. He's the co-author of Brain Power and author of How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci and several other bestsellers. His website is michaelgelb.com. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for being with us. Now, there was something a little bit interesting, and I know it's a little bit off track for your book, but I have to ask, you performed with the Rolling Stones and Bob Dylan?
Yes, I did. I worked my way through graduate school as a professional juggler, and I was practicing. I lived in London at the time. I was practicing in Hyde Park with my juggling partner, who was also the science editor for Reuters in those days. And a gentleman approached us and said, "We need jugglers with Mick Jagger and the Stones tonight at Earl's Court. We'll pay you £50 each if you can be there and juggle for a couple hours." We said, sure. So that night, we juggled, 10, 12, 14,000 people there or something. And that worked really well. So they invited us to the Nebworth Rock Festival, where we juggled in front of an audience of over 100,000 people on a stage shaped like Mick Jagger's mouth. No kidding.
Wow. Oh, I'm so glad I asked about that. And then what about Bob Dylan? Was that at that concert?
Yes, yeah, the same producers of that show were running Bob Dylan's tour through England. So they asked us if we could juggle there. Although with Bob Dylan, we were juggling just kind of outside of the main stage area. Whereas with the Stones, we were actually on stage. I met Mick, met the other Stones. They were really, really nice to us. They invited us to the cast party, and we had a blast. And I have to confess, I wasn't a particularly passionate Stones fan, and I appreciated Bob Dylan, but he wasn't ever really my favorite. But I did think, this will make a good story someday, and here we are. And I did get a friend of mine into those concerts as a guest, and he says, "Man, you got me into the Stones concert. You got me into Dylan. You're the best." So
I wonder if one of your next books shouldn't be about being in the right place at the right time. Because it sounds like you really were.
Yeah. Well, I think, that's the thing is, I don't think you can write the book about that. I think you just, I don't know if it's karma or how that works. I guess what you could do, the book we might want to write would be How to Avoid Being in the Wrong Place.
That could be useful, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like, speaking of the wrong place, it sounds like the wrong place lately might be social media.
Yeah. Well, it's just the wrong place is to be too wired up overall, because people are losing their sense of direct human connection. And our minds are being co-opted. Our nervous systems are being co-opted by big data, just like big tobacco took over people's lungs, big sugar took over the pancreas, and now big data is trying to take the whole nervous system. So we do talk a lot about the importance of getting away from all the wires and out in nature and connecting with the people who are most important to you, face to face, eye to eye, heart to heart, soul to soul.
So, and it sounds like you're not necessarily saying throw it out completely, but use it as a tool. Don't be a slave
to
that's,
it. Of course. This is the thing is, I mean, look, it's great. It's unbelievable. How amazing that we can access all of human knowledge instantly. I mean, we have access to more wisdom, more culture, more intelligence, more philosophy, more poetry from all the world's cultures instantaneously. The problem is, every time you go to access any of that, there is a massive trolling onslaught of garbage and slime and distortion ready to seduce you. And it's programmed by very clever electronic seduction artists to take you into a world that has nothing to do with what you probably would profess as your highest values. So more than ever, we need to be the curator of what impressions we expose ourselves to on a daily basis. And that requires conscious intervention. You have to wake up.
Thank you. We are speaking right now with Michael J. Gelb. You can find him at michaelgelb.com. And he's the author of this latest book is The Art of Connection, 7 Relationship Building Skills Every Leader Needs Now. And I was going to talk a little bit about a quote of that you put in your book that I posted on social media that started a whole big thing. But as I'm reading the title of the book, Every Leader Needs Now, the thought that came into my mind is, well, a lot of listeners might not see themselves as leaders.
Yeah, you know, we debated whether to put that in because we got to get you to open the book to read that you are a leader.
Yeah.
So let's explain is that emotions are contagious, for better or for worse. So the way you are, your demeanor, your energy, your facial expression is read instantaneously by everyone you come in contact with. And mirror neurons mediate this phenomenon that's going on everywhere people are interacting. And basically, in the simplest terms, when you are manifesting the demeanor that is, we could roughly call it positive, you're affecting other people in a positive way. And when you're manifesting a demeanor that we might, in a general term, call negative, you're affecting people in a negative way. And what if we consciously took responsibility for how we affect the world, starting with the smallest little interactions? Just, you know, you're checking out of the supermarket and you see the person who's the cashier, not just as this transactional servant of your needs, but as a human being. And you take, I mean, this is, you know, it doesn't mean you have to become their new best friend or take them out for coffee, but you see their humanity and you consciously share a moment of connection. There's a lot of research into this, that this is actually a huge factor in your own happiness, not to mention that it might brighten the day of another person. But people who are skilled at making these little everyday positive connections, they call them HQCs, high quality connections, strengthens your immune system, strengthens the researchers like to call a perceived sense of well-being, which is a fancy term for happiness.
Thank you, Michael. It sounds like what you're saying with regards to the topic of leadership is that we're all leaders, whether we like it or not.
Thank you for saying it so clearly. Yes, that is what I was suggesting. We're all leaders, and we lead as a parent. We lead as a member of a family, as a partner in a relationship, in any organization in which we are part of. And here's, of course, yes. Now, what if your job is specifically, you have an actual job that says, I lead this team of people, or I lead this division of people, or I lead this whole company of people? Well, then everything we're talking about, all of the elements of the art of connection, become that much more important, because yes, you have that much more responsibility, because all of these people are looking to you. Your children are looking to you. The people in your organization, if you're in that formal position, are looking to you. But even if you are not, one way the world has changed delightfully just in the last 30 or 40 years is organizations have become less hierarchical, not because they thought it was a nice, touchy-feely thing to do, but because the world is so dynamic. Change happens so quickly. Systems need to become more agile and flexible. We need more people to be thinking creatively and intelligently and sharing information in a faster and faster way. So this is what's driven the change of organizational structures to be more collaborative, to be more focused on bringing out the best in a diverse group of people. Unfortunately, not many people have actually been trained in how do you do that, and that's why I keep writing these books.
So that brings up, Michael, a question. You're talking about things being more dynamic and systems needing to change more quickly. There was a TED Talk, a woman who was telling a story about how back, I don't know exactly how long ago it was, but they started to research why young children were getting leukemia, and they discovered that it was because of pregnant women getting x-rays. And it took something like 25 years after they discovered this medical fact to stop giving pregnant women x-rays. And that was just boggled my mind when I heard it took 25 years. So are you saying now, hopefully, that these types of things will shift much more quickly as we learn about new information?
Well, that's what we're working on, yeah.
Hopefully.
That's what we're working on. I mean, there's a story, one of the opening chapters of The Art of Connection. I make a comparison between the statement of one of our great generals, McChrystal, and Brené Brown, the great author, social worker. And it's great when you have a top general and a social worker fundamentally coming to the same conclusion about what's most important. So McChrystal, you know, ran a global military force, a really serious business. And what he learned, what the military learned after the debacle in the Iranian desert years ago when they had the failed attempt to rescue the hostages, they realized that the different services didn't communicate with each other very effectively. And the commanders in the field had to call back to Washington before they were able to make decisions, and that was not timely. And they crashed and burned. It was a disaster. So in the debrief of that, the military figured out, you know, that we have to be way more collaborative in real time, and we have to get people on the front lines the power to make the decisions. And it's fascinating. McChrystal actually did a fabulous TED Talk, and he says, you know, the main thing that I learned in running this global force is that connection is more important than ever. He said, what we need is shared consciousness. Okay, so this is a senior military leader. Now, then go listen to Brené Brown's TED Talk. It's an amazing counterpoint because she's working on a different kind of battleground. You know, she's working with abuse and addiction and family trauma, but she comes to the very same conclusion that connection is the essence of life. It's the most important thing. It's why we're here. She says it's why we're here. So when the general and the social worker are saying the same essential thing, and it's also, you know, it's research validated in terms of, okay, what makes us happy? What helps us live longer? What keeps us healthier? Connection, more than your position, more than your finances, more than your status, your sense of connectedness is what creates happiness, health, and longevity. And the question is, why does it seem to be getting perverted by the wacky world we live in today so that people seem more lonely, less connected, even though we're more wired up? How do you bring that real soul-to-soul, heart-to-heart, face-to-face connection into your life every day. That's what the book's all about.
I'm going away. Look into my eyes. Last Sunday of every month from 11 to 5. Won't you here with me?
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
We are speaking right now with Michael J. Gelb. He is the author of The Art of Connection, 7 Relationship Building Skills Every Leader Needs Now. And just to clarify again, all of us are leaders, whether we want to be or not. So this applies to right? all of yeah. us.
Right. And for better or for worse.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so important. For better or for worse. You're either what you're doing, your little actions are either contributing to a toxic field or to a field of loving kindness and consciousness. So I recommend the loving kindness and consciousness.
Beautiful. Now, what if we are surrounded by leaders who are toxic? What do we do to not, because we're going to catch their emotions and we're going to have mirror neurons.
Yes. Yes. This is such a germane question in our world today, because when we witness people in positions of responsibility who are abusive, when we witness these people saying derogatory things, speaking in a dismissive manner towards other people, it turns out that that is contagious, and it does create a kind of culture in a, we know this in an organization, there are plenty of studies, when people are like that, if a senior person is like that, it poisons the culture of the company. And when they interview managers who are held accountable for this kind of bad behavior, they'll frequently say when they get into the depth of the interview, they find out, well, the reason that they think they're that way is because that's how their manager treated them. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's like Moe, Larry, and Curly in the Three Stooges. You know, Moe bops Larry, and Larry bops Curly, and Curly just goes woo. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're laughing about it, but it's really serious. Christine Porath has studied this. Jane Dutton, Monica Warline, many others have studied this, and the conclusion they come to is that in a business, for example, incivility is expensive. Mm-hmm. It actually, because your best people will leave. You know, people won't put up with this. And we cannot afford to have even one person who's abusive in an organization. Now, what do you do if you're stuck in a situation like that and you feel that you don't have the option to leave? There's one of the people that I talked to, great guy, Bob Sutton. He's a professor of engineering at Stanford, and he wrote this classic book called The No Asshole Rule. And he talks about how important it is to get these people out of your company, but he gives a lot of really good advice on what to do if you can't, and how do you manage when you're in a toxic environment. And the key thing, again, it is to you have to be conscious so you don't act like Larry, acting it out and displacing it onto Curly, so that you don't make yourself as vulnerable to the toxic behavior, and you don't mirror it back. I mean, it's very easy to see sometimes. You know, we can all see examples. There are plenty of them in almost every walk of life at the moment of people who are behaving and unfortunately getting caught in a dreadful and abusive fashion. But the vilification and demonization of those people isn't part of the solution. So, because if you just basically bring the same energy that you are condemning into your condemnation, it's not really helping find a solution. So, this is really advanced inner work to first of all find a way to connect to the part of yourself that is free from these interpersonal assaults, and then to be sure that you're not unconsciously or otherwise acting them out yourself.
Thank you, Michael. Yeah, I remember when Charlottesville was going on, and it was Brené Brown, actually, I believe, who had a Facebook Live and was talking about the importance of not shaming people who are using unconscious language or using racist language, using that opportunity as a way to educate them in a kind way so that they are able to see what they're doing wrong. Because as soon as someone becomes shamed, then they have to defend themselves.
Yes. Yes. And I also thought it was a wonderful thing is after Charlottesville that the people who stood up most passionately for what we consider to be classic American values of life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, and human rights were business leaders, because this has become a reality in most businesses, that the notion of diversity, the notion of opportunity, the notion of giving everyone a chance to show what they can do, this has become a very important part of the positive fabric of our society. And the other people who stood up post Charlottesville most passionately and vehemently were the Joint Chiefs of Staff, right? The senior military leaders of this country stood up and said, you know, this kind of behavior, this kind of language is not acceptable. And they were not making politically correct statements. They meant it from their hearts. And it is heartening to see the good people standing up at times when it really is important to accentuate just how important these core values of respect and equal opportunity really are.
Mm-hmm. And I think it comes down to, Michael, when people behave in a disrespectful way, it's because they've been disrespected somewhere down the line. I mean, we're talking about emotional contagion and mirror neurons, and people who feel respected tend to respect other people.
It's a fundamental human need. We all share the same needs, and one of those is the need to feel respected. And it's when somebody is, it's a curious, again, this is not easy stuff. It's like to be empathic and to be compassionate, even in the face of unacceptable behavior. So you can't collude with the unacceptable behavior. It's important to not allow yourself to be an enabler of things that are not right, without demonizing, without shaming, without speaking in the same kind of denigrating way about the person who you think is acting disrespectfully. So again, that's why what I tried to share, these seven skills that we explore in the Art of Connection, they're really profound skills of inner work. It's the inner work that we need to do for our whole lives if we want to enrich our relationships, if we want to deepen our relationships, if we want to not just be acting out our automatic programming in an unconscious way, running our script, just playing the preordained part in the movie. Because that, you know, that's the default setting. We all have a default setting. We all have a personality typology. We all have different tendencies, and by nature they're unconscious. So you got to, we all have to wake up to what those are and come up with practices that help us shift and change. This is what people talk a lot about. Consciousness isn't just sitting there meditating or going to a yoga class. Consciousness really becomes meaningful when you see that you're about to act in a way that is unconscious and not in alignment with your higher values, and you are able to change.
Thank you, Michael.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
If you're one of the millions of Canadians who experience depression, anxiety, or some other form of mental illness, there's a free course that can help. The Wellness Recovery Action Plan is an evidence-based program that works. It's developed and facilitated by peers who have experienced their own mental health challenges and have used RAP to recover and maintain long-term stability. It's based on the key concepts of hope, personal responsibility, education, self-advocacy, and support. For more information about the free RAP groups hosted by Vancouver Coastal Health, visit their peer-led website, spotlightonmentalhealth.com.
Unearthing the depths of contemporary cassettes and vinyl undergrounds, ranging from DIY bedroom pop and garage rock all the way to harsh noise and, of course, drone. Pop Drone, every Wednesday at 10 to 11:30 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
My advice to young girls would be, go home after school.
Right now, we are speaking with Michael J. Galb. He is the author of The Art of Connection, 7 Relationship Building Skills Every Leader Needs Now. And we should probably talk about what those skills are. But you're also doing a couple of workshops in January of 2018. So I don't know which you'd like to talk about first.
Well, we'll do them both. We'll do it all together.
All right.
the workshop 1440 Multiversity is this fabulous new learning center near San Jose, and they're sponsoring my program on how to think like Leonardo da Vinci from January 1st to January 5th. And we're going to go deep into the thinking strategies of the greatest genius who ever lived. It's a fabulous opportunity for people to really learn to think creatively. And then if they want to really have a fabulous full week, come on down to Esalen, where on January 5th to the 7th, I'm going to do an intensive on the art of connection. And the reason I set it up in that order is first you learn to think really creatively. But if you want to get your creative ideas to actually happen, it's all about relationships. So then come learn the art of connection and the 7 skills. And the first of those skills is embracing humility. And the reason it comes first is that if you don't have humility, you're not going to be interested in the other 6 skills. Right? And the thing is, If you're arrogant, you're probably not going to pick up this book anyway, although maybe someone with humility who loves you anyway will give you a copy of the book so you can see that the key to deepening, enriching our relationships is the humility that leads us to be curious. leads us to be open. It leads us to be accessible. We talked about Brené. She's popularized the word vulnerable. And I think she means accessible and open and receptive. I'm not crazy about the word vulnerable because the root of it is vulnerare, which means to wound. Mm. And synonyms for vulnerable include sitting duck and sucker.
I don't want to be those things.
Yeah, we don't want to be those things. But what we're really talking about is that my humanity, my being, is available and present and open and is affected by you and what you have to say, because I am a caring, alive, fully sentient being, and so are you. So we connect on a human, on the level of our humanness. And this is, you know, this for leaders in the old top-down hierarchical command and control world, vulnerability didn't seem to have a place. Accessibility wasn't important. Leaders used to feel that I have to run the whole show, tell everybody what to do. I know everything, you know nothing. Well, the world's way too complex today for anybody to know everything. We need collaboration because we have to mine the ideas of different people if we're going to do the kind of innovative thinking that we need to do to function effectively. So humility creates openness, it creates curiosity, and people are drawn, especially younger people today, the best, most skilled people in workplaces today want to be in environments where their opinions are valued, where they, you know, they know too much, they have too much information about what's possible. So why would you ever work in an organization that treated you like a thing and as a purely transactional unit of commerce, when you could work in a place where you felt you were valued as a human being for your unique talents and abilities, and you had a chance to express them? So there are, you know, those are the kind of organizations that I actually work with, and we get these wonderful people who want to be part of that sort of workplace. And this is, we're jumping ahead to one of the other skills, but we don't have to go in linear order. But one of the other ones is to balance the exchange of energy, because leadership, again, at every level, is it's about energy. It's about managing your own energy and the energy of others. This is the work of my good friend, Professor Jim Clausen at the University of Virginia, Darden Graduate School of Business. And every relationship, whether it's a marriage, a friendship, a business deal, the healthiest relationships are characterized by this free flow of energy, this abundance of positive energy and gratitude. The worst relationships are characterized by the opposite of that, where everybody's looking out for themselves. And too many, you know, average relationships are sort of back and forth between those modalities. But the most wonderful relationships on every level of life are those where we feel a sense of gratitude and abundance, and we're looking to enrich the lives of the people around us, and they're looking to enrich our life, and we feel this overwhelming sense of gratitude. And I mean, that's, you know, I aspire to have my life be like that. My marriage is like that. My friendships are like that. My collaborative business partnerships are like that. So I want my readers to have lives that are more like that, which is why I think that's just such a useful principle.
Thank you. There's so many tips. Well, there's seven, actually. in The Art of Connection, seven relationship building skills every leader needs now. But I really like that, the balance of energy exchange on synchronicity. On this show, we've talked a lot about the importance of that in romantic relationships and within a family mm-hmm. unit, where if all parties are giving to each other and giving to the greater good of the partnership, then their needs automatically get taken care of. Whereas if we're all looking out for our own needs, it becomes really not happy.
And this is the thing, is people need the communication skills to adjust, to monitor and adjust the balance of energy exchange. Because what do you do if your needs aren't being met? Do you just act out? Do you stop meeting their needs? How do you communicate around this? How do you share what needs to be shared in a respectful and loving way that your partner's able to integrate? So it's first become aware of the balance of energy exchange. Realize, of course, that you want to have this free flow of abundance where all parties feel grateful. Then look at what you may need to do to adjust that balance. Sometimes for a lot of people, it is learning what William Ury calls the power of a positive no. So I put a piece about his brilliant work there. It's like, learn, for a lot of people, they have to learn how to say no to the things that will compromise their ability to have enough energy to contribute to this positive sharing of abundance. Learn how to give and receive feedback without making a situation worse. A lot of people are not, because people aren't trained in how to do this. They don't know how to give and they don't know how to receive feedback. And I learned how to do this years ago. It was one of the most valuable things in my life. And I give feedback to CEOs, but I can also share it with my wife, and she knows how to share it with me. And we can do it in a way, Ken Blanchard calls it the breakfast of champions. The problem is it's undigestible breakfast for a lot of people because of the way it's served. So learn how to serve it and learn how to receive it. Because that's how do you adjust? And in the healthiest environments, people want your feedback. They're going to come to you for it. As you get more skilled in how to give it, they realize, oh, I can improve. I can get better. I can be more efficient in meeting the needs of my colleague or my partner.
Thank you, Michael. Now, if we read your book, which I'm reading it right now, The Art of Connection, I just realized that made it sound like I'm reading it as I'm talking to you, but
right, yeah.
not doing that. Yeah. but with regards to the balance of energy exchange, your course on the Art of Connection in January 2018. Are you going to go deeper into that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what we do is at Esalen, first of all, one of the most beautiful places on the planet. And I love teaching there because to connect with others, it really helps to connect with yourself. As a matter of fact, there's just no hope without real connection with your own soul. How are you going to really connect with others? And the exquisite beauty of Esalen puts you right in touch with yourself and with nature and with beauty and goodness and truth. I mean, it's a magical place. So that's part of why I go there. So it does a lot of my work for me, just the fact that we're there. Mm-hmm. But then in a workshop format, what I like to do is instead of I let people read the book. We're not going to talk about the book over the weekend. We're going to share all sorts of experiential practices and playful explorations and ways of experiencing a deeper sense of connection and practicing. It's great to actually practice giving and receiving feedback and get some coaching on how to do that. Practice learning how to say a positive no, just for example. Learn some of the practices for organizing your nervous system under stress so that you can apply the Art of Connection in the face of conflict.
Awesome. I really like that. Because when we read a book, we can understand it on an intellectual level. But unless we're actually using the new skills, they're not going to become our new habit.
Big time. Well, that's why I like to follow. I mean, I in the book, there are lots of really practical exercises that people can do to make this deeper than just, oh, well, that's an interesting idea. I try to fill, each chapter has some real practice that everyone can do. Having said that, we did this weekend up at the Omega Institute a couple weeks ago, and it was a love fest. I mean, it was a lot. I mean, because it was just people, the sense of connectedness and alignment and uplifting energy and new friendships and just, you know, sweetness and soulfulness and love. I mean, was just overflowing. It was. I mean, I love my work, I got to tell you.
I want all of us to love our work in the way that you love your work. Do you see that with more than 7 billion people on the planet and all of us having certain basic needs? Do you see that being possible for the world?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, Buckminster Fuller figured out a long time ago that there's enough to go around. We just have to get it around. And that takes creativity, that takes innovative thinking, that takes relationship building. So, you know, these are the themes of my work and my attempt to help contribute to that more equitable and balanced world. And also, you know, it's why I work with businesses to aim to help them be even more skilled in crafting environments that are genuinely human-centered at every level, not just for their employees and not just for their customers, but for their communities, for the environment. And one of the things we've learned in the last 20 years or so, the real case studies of this now, my friend and colleague, Professor Raj Sisodia, wrote this great book, Firms of Endearment, making the business case that organizations that treat all stakeholders with care and respect as a core commitment of the way they do business will actually perform better than organizations who don't over time. Now, the ones that we see a lot of times in the news, the stories are terrible stories of people, organizations, short-term greed and abuse and environmental disasters caused by that short-term greed and so on. And these are tragic and they do exist. It is a reality. But you don't hear as much about the stories of companies that are really, really working to make the world a better place and that they're doing really well. These are the best investments. So there are a lot of people who have good intentions in starting their business, but they just don't know how to really execute this conscious strategy. So this is what my next book's going to be about. Raj and I are collaborating on it, is how do you create a system that encourages people to always, without exception, treat others with dignity, kindness, and respect, and be good stewards of the environment. So this, you know, once you know that that's possible and that you'll make more money over time by doing good, why would you consider doing anything else?
So I'm curious, Michael, how long you think it's going to take, because a lot of companies are developing this, but a lot of other companies seem to be digging their heels in more than ever before. So what do you think it's going to take to reach that tipping point where this collaboration and this human respect becomes the norm in business?
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to say that I have some prophetic insight into that, but all I know is I just have to, you know, I have this little, my little drop in this massive ocean is intended to ripple out with as much creativity, as much innovation, and as much loving kindness as is possible to bring, and then we'll see what waves turn into what we hope will be positive tsunamis. So I only know what I can do within my tiny little circle of influence here, but it is expanding as I act within it. And there, you know, seismic, cosmic forces that we're all watching play out in ways that, you know, unexpected, and I expect more of the unexpected. But it's good to have I have a sense of very powerful, full being alignment with the importance of sharing the message of waking up to the role we can play and the way we can be more creative and compassionate and wise in our interactions with others.
So it sounds like what you're saying is that none of us have the power on our own to change the world, but what we have is the power to make our little circle of the world as good as it can be. And then the hope is that each of those people who are positively affected ripples out.
Well, this is it. It's Leonardo da Vinci's, one of his favorite images was the image of a stone tossed into a still pond. And you know how the circles go out from that point of entry. And he would write in his notebooks about when does this just go out forever? And he thought the same thing about the tone of a bell. You ring a bell and the waves go out forever. So it's a wonderful way to think about our smallest actions. If you can be in a little moment where you can consciously choose loving kindness or forgiveness or empathy, or to not take something so personally, or to look for a creative solution instead of making a situation worse, then you're acting to send out more positive ripples. So, you know, if it just seems like common sense, if more people are sending out more positive ripples, that'll have a more positive effect. So all you can do is act within your circle of influence, and don't, you know, I'd say don't think of it as give up whether it's little or big. Just act within the framework where you have choice around how you act, in as loving and caring and wise a way as you possibly can, and endeavor and strive, you know, to do that each day, and to look for ways, you know, embrace humility, look for how can I be more loving? How can I be more attuned to the people in my life? How can I do a better job of anticipating their needs? And how can I do a better job of communicating my own needs so that I become more skilled at getting them met in a way that works with the other people who can help meet them.
Thank you. Well, it sounds like we really could have a 10-hour conversation about just the basics of this, but we can all start by reading The Art of Connection, 7 Relationship Building Skills Every Leader Needs Now. Your website is michaelgelb.com, G-E-L-B.com. And we just have a few minutes left in the show. I have so many more questions I want to ask, but there's no more time. So I'm wondering, what do you want to leave us with today?
Oh, thanks. Well, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about synchronicity. And my experience is that when you're asking these kinds of questions, these questions about how can I be more attuned to others, how can I be more empathic, how can I be more honoring of my own needs and more skilled in expressing them, that you invite more positive synchronicity into your life. And you start to know, I find these questions are a correlate with, like, if I'm asking the question about who can help me in a particular way or how can I help somebody, the opportunity to be helped or to help tends to arise sometimes in deliciously unexpected ways.
Mm. So that part of that being open and curious and embracing mm-hmm. humility, not necessarily the wounded part of vulnerability, but the open and accessible part.
Yeah, and what's, you know, the wounded part is okay. Like, of course, that's where, you know, we need the deepest love, the deepest compassion, the deepest empathy for whatever our particular version of the wound that everybody's, you know, wherever, there's nobody who isn't wounded. It's just we want to be part of the healing, healing of the self and healing of others and healing of the world. And what, you know, when it comes to healing, we all need all the help we can get. But you know, part of where that healing begins is when we are seeking it, when we are looking for it, when we are asking for guidance and resources and connections who help to facilitate that in our lives.
Mm. Beautiful. There's one other thing that I wanted to ask you about and didn't get around to it. So hopefully I can, how are we doing for time on your end?
I'm good.
Okay. Good. So there was something in the beginning of your book, page 46, The Illusion of Transparency.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to talk about that because we all kind of have our, we think we're communicating in a way that's understandable. And a lot of the time it's not.
Right. Well, there's like, you're referring to a piece in the book that documents some of the research about how we just think that what we say or what we intend or what we mean is what other people are getting. And guess what? It usually isn't. And this is part of, this is some of the practical, I give people the research, but we have a lot of exercise we do to help people realize just how unreliable your everyday communication is. You know, everybody remembers the telephone game where you take a sentence and you pass it along a line of kids. We used to do this when I was a kid. And after the 10th kid whispers it in the ear of the next kid, and they say what they thought they heard, and it's entirely different from what the original sentence was. Well, that distortion is being played out in relationships, both intimate and political and business. It's interfering with our ability to communicate and connect. And it's part of why we want to be humble, because we think that what we're saying is just transparent and obvious and clear, and of course you understand it. And then guess what? They didn't. So humility, if you're paying attention, one of my little mottos is, if you're not humble, then you haven't been paying attention.
Well, we have been speaking with Michael J. Gelb. He's the author of The Art of Connection, 7 Relationship Building Skills Every Leader Needs Now. Also the author of How to Think Like Leonardo da Vinci. And I'm guessing that you can find more information about those two workshops in January at michaelgelb.com. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. People come to the website, michaelgelb.com. and can find all kinds of free articles, free videos. We're always posting updates on my calendar and public seminars, and love to have people sign up for our free newsletter and keep in touch. MichaelGelb.com. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael. Is there anything else you want to add before we say goodbye?
We could go on. We could go on and on. I would say, one other thing I'll add, just because we didn't have a chance to get into the whole piece of the conflict chapter, is the last chapter of the book. And the reason it comes last, humility comes first, because that's what you need to get started. And conflict comes last because you need the other 6 skills to be able to navigate conflict in an intelligent and creative way. And one thing I'd like to just share with people is a lot of us grew up thinking of conflict the same way we think about a contest. I like sports, I like basketball, you know, there's a winner and a loser, we keep score, that's what makes it interesting. If that's how you think about conflict in your life, you will tend to make it worse, and find that it's hard to resolve and hard to find creative solutions. So a contest needs a winner or loser. A conflict needs skills in coming up with creative solutions to meet the needs of the parties in the conflict.
That is beautifully said. Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who are often the winner or feel like they're the winner in their conflict. And then what happens is one day they look around and there's no one around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we want to work in collaboration to resolve conflict.
It's about meeting needs. Leaders are people who can meet complex needs of diverse constituencies in highly skilled and elegant ways. At least those are the kind of leaders that I'm working with.
Well, I hope that we all get to the point where all the people that we're working with are wanting to collaborate and mutually meet each other's needs. I would love to live in that world.
Well, we're working on manifesting that world together.
Mm. Well, thank you for the part that you are playing, Michael, in manifesting that kind of world.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for taking the time to listen to this conversation this hour. I hope that it has been valuable to you and inspiring in some way. And thank you so much for your time, Michael. Thank you for listening. I want to send you lots of love. Be well. Namaste. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
Still Were you directly affected by the LGBT purge in the Canadian Armed Forces, RCMP, or Federal Public Service? If so, a legal settlement may affect your rights. You may be eligible to receive compensation of $5,000 to $50,000 or more in cases of exceptional harm, as well as other non-financial benefits, or you may choose to opt out of the settlement. Information about the settlement, deadlines, your rights, and the claim